The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
If you're any kind of film buff, you know the name Paul Schrader. He's one of the great screenwriters of our time, the collaborator with Martin Scorsese on Taxi Driver, Raging Bull, and The Last Temptation of Christ. As a director, though, Schrader has struggled to get his own films made. So alongside acclaimed titles like American Gigolo and Mishima, there are movies like An Exorcist prequel that are probably best forgotten. Schrader's new film, First Reformed, has just come out, starring Ethan Hawke. And in the view of Richard Brody, who writes about film for The New Yorker, First Reformed is one of the best movies by one of our great filmmakers. Paul Schrader is one of Richard's heroes, an auteur in the true sense, a writer and a director with a distinctive style informed by his predecessors, but with a set of concerns that are all his own.
And that's exactly what the company wants. To keep you on the line, they'll do anything to keep you on their line. They pit the lifers against the new boys, the old against the young, the black against the white, everybody to keep us in our place. I mean, can't you understand that?
A lot of people, when they hear the name Paul Schrader, they think of Taxi Driver. I first knew of his work from Blue Collar, which was, I thought, a fierce and passionate movie.
You're trying to hurt somebody instead of helping yourself. That's your problem.
I got a problem now.
There's a kind of shattering, awe-inspiring intensity to the best of Schrader's films that no other living filmmaker can match.
All right, so how do we help ourselves?
Blackmail.
I think the reason why Schrader is not thought of in the same way as certainly Spielberg or Coppola or Scorsese is that precisely because of the nature of his upbringing, his films don't have the same pop culture hooks as theirs do. Schrader grew up in Grand Rapids, Michigan, in a strict Dutch Calvinist community, and he depicts that way of life in his 1979 film, Hardcore.
Well, T stands for total depravity. All men, through original sin, are totally evil and incapable of good. All my works are as filthy rags in the sight of the Lord.
Paul Schrader, you were brought up in a very stern religious environment.
Well, yeah, in retrospect, you know, I mean, you're not quite aware how you're different when you don't see anyone else who is different. And so if you go to church three times on Sunday with a Dutch service in the afternoon, and you go to a catechism twice a week, and then you have Bible classes every single day in school, and all your activities are church-sponsored, you're just normal. You're not different. You're like everybody else. In truth, it was a very good upbringing. And Calvinism is a rather intellectual form of Protestantism. So they believed in education. Calvin believed you could actually think your way into heaven.
So there's no sense of extreme authority placed on you at home?
Well, yeah, I mean, there were certain things you did and did not do.
Well, you didn't see a movie until you were how old, 17?
Yeah. Well, our denomination had a prescription against worldly amusements, of which movies were one. But because we didn't have TV and movies, there was a lot of storytelling. Sundays, go over to our grandmother's house after the service, and the uncles would sit around the table and tell what happened that week. And if you were a kid, you could sit in the room. You couldn't speak. And, you know, you tell me which is better, sitting in front of a TV, you know, hearing that manufactured plot lines or hearing your uncles tell about their day.
Two of Schrader's early influences were Bergman and Bresson. Both of them made films that dramatized varieties of spiritual torment.
I didn't think too much about movies until I got to college. And this was in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And there was a softcore porn theater, Russ Meyer kind of place, that was running out of business. And the owner had this brilliant idea to have a three-week Ingmar Bergman Festival. And I guess he got a real bargain on them. And kids from the college started going over there. You know, and I went over there and I saw through a glass darkly. And, you know, Bergman is talking about the very same things we're talking about in class and in church. And I realized that, you know, these two items are not incompatible, you know. Yeah, we were just taught they were incompatible, but they're not. And because my first real love of the movies was the intellectual European cinema of the 60s, that has informed me. You know, you never forget your first love.
Right, exactly. But when you got to Hollywood, many of your colleagues of your generation had already a great orientation in the commercial cinema, whereas you were entering the realm of commercial cinema with an orientation in the severely intellectual movies.
Yeah, and, well, something happened in March of 1969. I went to a screening of Pickpocket at the Los Feliz.
You mean Robert Bresson's film, Pickpocket?
Je sais que d'habitude, ceux qui ont fait ces choses se taisent.
I said, wait a second. I said, I can make a film like that. He writes in his journal, and he goes out and commits some crimes, and he comes back and writes in his journal. Then he goes out and talks to the girl next door, and he writes in the journal some more. I said, I could make that film. And then 4 years later, I wrote Taxi Driver.
You wrote the film, but you didn't direct it.
No, I didn't even write. I wrote it purely as a self-therapy. I had hit a very, very rough period. I'd been living in my car. I got a pain in my stomach, went to the hospital. I had a bleeding ulcer, 26. And I realized I hadn't been talking to people in weeks. There was something growing inside of me. I was becoming something. And if I didn't pull this thing out, it would become me. And the thing that I felt I was becoming was Travis Bickle.
I just want to go out and, you know, like really, really, really do something.
Taxi life, you mean?
Yeah, well, nah, it's, I don't know. I just want to go out. I really, you know, I really want to. I got some bad ideas in my head.
Schrader made one of the most auspicious debuts as a director of any filmmaker of his time. His first three films are all classics in their way: Blue Collar, Hardcore, and American Gigolo. Schrader himself has said that, you know, he really became a director with his third film, American Gigolo. And I think in part that's true. That's the film in which he most conspicuously crafts a style of his own.
Did you make the right decision to come here last night? Was it what you expected?
No. It was like really making love.
Throughout the 1990s, Schrader continued to make a series of films that were justifiably acclaimed, but that didn't quite establish him as a commercial filmmaker in Hollywood. Hollywood studio movies of that era were increasingly pop culture oriented in a way that Schrader, because of his own background, isn't. Because of his worsening relations with the studios, he got to the point with the Canyons in 2012 where he had to put in some of his own funds and raise other funds with Kickstarter. Schrader's main theme is the sin of doing for money what should be done for love, and in the Canyons, he centers it on his own lifelong activity, namely filmmaking in Hollywood.
I was going to do a film with Bret Easton Ellis, but I said to Bret, the economy of the film business has changed so radically. I think we could just do one. You know, we'll put some money together. We'll raise some money over the internet, and we'll just make the film ourselves. And so we were able to cast people we couldn't cast otherwise, Lindsay Lohan, because she is not insurable. And then Bret was very keen on me hiring this porn star, James Dean. And so we pulled it off, we sold it, we made money, I would never do it again.
Yeah, from what I've read, the process was fairly stressful, making of that film.
Well, it always is stressful for one reason or another. And this reason had a lot to do with Lindsay and her problem behavior. You know, it's one of the... In really frustrating circumstances where you say to someone, you explain, if you do these things, it's going to be great for you. You have 13 shooting days. If you can show up ready to work in good spirits for 13 days, you'll be back on the boards. She got it. She totally got it. She couldn't do it.
And it's really unfortunate because I thought that her performance in it, the performance you elicited from her, and it was really pretty wonderful.
You're not happy, Tara.
Who said anything about happy? He takes care of me, and he's in love with me. It's serious. Fuck it, Ryan. Who's happy? Who's really happy? Tell me.
Gina.
Oh, of course.
Gina is. Gina's happy.
Right, another reason why I couldn't stand being around her.
Are you washed?
Paul Schrader's new movie is called First Reformed.
My hands shake as I write these lines.
Are you washed in the blood?
First Reformed looks like a sort of religious drama. I don't take it as a religious drama. I take it as a work of political fury, where Taxi Driver was an eruption of rage at the duplicity, the corruption, the violence of the Vietnam War era. So First Reformed is a work of fury at the wanton violence of America's post-9/11 endless wars and the political and religious corruption that come along with it. In First Reformed, Ethan Hawke plays a minister in a small church in upstate New York who's in a state of spiritual, emotional, and physical torment. He counsels a parishioner who's an eco-terrorist, and he then makes that man's cause his own. What Ernst Toller, the protagonist of First Reformed, and Travis Bickle have in common is profound alienation and rage at the state of society. It's as if the violence of the outer world has seeped into his own bones and now is about to burst out.
A damaged man. He has a sickness that Kierkegaard called the sickness unto death, despair. So he makes a leap that maybe a more sanguine person wouldn't make. You know, there's a lot of blood in the DNA of Christianity. And when Christians start to go off the rail, this is the way they often go, which is they start confusing the sacrifice that Jesus made for them with the sacrifice they can make for themselves. The idea that my suffering will earn me glory.
Jesus doesn't want our suffering. He suffered for us. Mm-hmm. He wants our commitment and our obedience.
Mm-hmm. And what of his creation? The heavens declare the glory of God. God is present everywhere in every plant, every river, every tiny insect. The whole world is a manifestation of his holy presence. I think this is an issue where the church can lead, but they say nothing.
You were brought up in a religious household, and you've just made a movie about a minister. Do you mind if I ask you, what is your particular relationship to faith now?
I've gone through phases in my life. When I had children, I became Episcopalian because I was raised with all the rules and none of the ritual. And Episcopalians is all the ritual and none of the rules. So that seemed like a good idea. But now recently I've switched the last couple of years Presbyterian. What kind of believer am I? I don't know. I mean, Camus said that I don't believe, I choose to believe. You know, I mean... There is something about setting some time aside on Sunday morning to organize your week. You know, people don't walk out of church because they're bored. They go to church to be bored and to have that quasi-meditative hour and a half. And so I still welcome that.
In effect, the slow cinema of the spiritual life.
Yes. Yeah, and that's one of the attractions of actual cinema, too, is that you, just like you make a commitment to drive over to church, you make a commitment to drive over to the cinema.
And do you have a sense that the faith in cinema, so to speak, is decreasing because it's being consumed at home more casually?
You know, when people take movies seriously, it's very easy to make serious movies. When I was coming up in the 60s and 70s, people actually took movies seriously. They wanted to know. They looked for answers. What about this women's movement, this gay movement, this drug movement? You know, give us some movies that sort of explain that. And, of course, we gave them movies that explained it, and it was a wonderful period. Now people aren't asking that question anymore. They're not saying, you know, explain Donald Trump in a movie because we've got... Well, because he is a movie, I guess. I mean, because there's no real center to the culture, and it hurts us. But you know, that is a much bigger thing than movies.
Writer and director Paul Schrader talking with The New Yorker's Richard Brody. Schrader's new film, First Reformed, is in theaters now.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.